It's Monday morning. I'm Dean Rothbart. Matt Mason is a man of many words, an author, public speaker, and an outspoken evangelist for the arts, particularly poetry. So it was uncharacteristic of Matt that he was rendered speechless when in January of this year, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts selected him to be the official poet of the Cornhusker State. Matt, an Omaha native, joins a lengthy honor roll of Wizard Academy graduates who've been recognized, sometimes globally, for their creativity and professional excellence. These include a Nobel Prize winner, Pulitzer Prize honorees, best-selling authors, renowned celebrities, and hundreds, perhaps even thousands, of successful, innovative business owners and entrepreneurs. Does the Wizard Academy make these virtuosos, or do they make the Wizard Academy so special? It is, I suspect, a combination of both. For Matt, he was already a successful writer and denizen of the arts before he attended the Wizard Academy last year. Nonetheless, as you're about to hear, he still raves about his time on campus and the fresh knowledge and contacts that he came away with. In assuming the post of Nebraska State Poet, which is a 5-year renewable appointment, Matt aims to travel the state from schools to prisons, sharing his love of poetry, supporting the state's writers, and inspiring Nebraskans from all walks of life to express themselves creatively. For almost 10 years, Matt has served as the executive director of the Nebraska Writers Coalition, which is a nonprofit group that promotes poets in the schools and organizes quality poetry programs for adults. In assuming the position of state poet, Matt succeeds Twyla Hansen, and Twyla's predecessor, one of Matt's literary idols, William Clothcorn. Clothcorn served as state poet from 1982 until 2011. Why is it that states such as Nebraska even bother with a state poet? And do the arts, can we say, genuinely matter to overall quality of life for a state's citizens? These are a few of the questions that I put to Matt during our conversation. When you listen, you'll also discover why Matt titled his latest collection of poems, The Baby That Ate Cincinnati. That's especially unusual given that all of his roots are in Nebraska. By the way, make sure you listen all the way to the end of this week's podcast, or skip there if you're short on time, to hear Matt read an excerpt from The Baby That Ate Cincinnati, his chapter called Notes for My Daughter Against Chasing Storms. Believe me, hearing a poet of Matt's caliber reading his own work is a very special experience. Now, my interview with Matt Mason, author, Wizard Academy alumnus, and the official Nebraska State Poet.
This is Roy H. Williams, founder of Roy H. Williams Marketing and co-founder, along with my wife Penny, of the nonprofit Wizard Academy. The Academy draws successful business owners and executives from around the world. You're listening to Monday Morning Radio, featuring interviews with unconventional men and women who are putting into practice the profitable lessons we teach at Wizard Academy. Monday Morning Radio is produced by Dean Rothbart, who co-hosts the popular Business Unconventional radio news magazine.
Matt, it's great to have you with us. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So congratulations on the new appointment as Nebraska's state poet. Does the appointment come with an official residence or maybe a chauffeur-driven limousine?
Sadly, no.
No, huh?
It does not. There's no salary. There's no limo. There's no free burritos at a certain place in town. At least not yet. I'm hoping.
Well, but it is a precursor to a 2024 run for president, is it not?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much in the contract.
You've got the platform now, and then you go from there. Okay, so according to the authoritative Omaha World Herald, you were essentially, the paper says, speechless when you learned that Governor Ricketts selected you as the Nebraska State Poet. Is that true?
Fairly. It was kind of hard to really put words to it. It's a true honor and all, but it kind of comes after, you know, a lifetime of work project. And it's not like the governor, I don't suspect, knows a lot about poetry, but it's really chosen by the Nebraska Arts Council, Humanities Nebraska, the Nebraska Library Commission, and a panel of people who I just have such respect for. And to go through this process and be chosen by all these people is, yeah, what do you even say?
Wow. I mean, it's nice. It's a 5-year appointment followed by it's renewable. I saw that one of the previous, not your most immediate predecessor, but one of your previous predecessors was in the post for like 28 years or something.
Yes. Well, that was at that point, it was a lifetime appointment. But when Bill Clefcorn, who is an idol of mine, when he passed away, no one could really remember the process. So they had to reinvent the process for selecting a state poet. And so that at that point, they made it a 5-year. Twyla, who was my predecessor, she wanted to do it for 5 years and was happy with that. And so didn't ask to be renewed. And yeah, we'll see. I think there's a lot of great poets who I would like to see in this post. So I don't know what I'll do in 5 years, if I'll want to stay on or not.
So this is a intrusive question, but since this pays so well, and I do see,
oh yeah,
and I do see that there is a demand on your time in the sense that the Arts Council promotes the idea that you can go around, you're available to go around and speak at all sorts of groups. Did you do something earlier in your life to establish a financial platform from which you can afford all this volunteer time?
Well, of course, because I have 2 English degrees, and as everyone knows,
that
sets me up for life.
That's it.
And then I pursued poetry, which is just adding to the riches.
Well,
and then went into nonprofit work. So, you know, sky's the limit.
Hey, well, it's pretty nice of you to do it, to be honest. Now, let's review your background just a little bit. You are, like Korn, a native of Nebraska, born, raised in Nebraska. But you ultimately, so go back a little bit. You got the poetry literature bug, I think I read in the Omaha World Herald, in part from a teacher who reminded you of Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society. What were you like at that age? And then what captivated you about poetry?
You know, I was in college. I was in California, just moved away from Nebraska for the first time. And at that point, I was writing poems, but I wasn't as interested in the poetry that we were studying in classes. It didn't engage me at that point. But then I took this class, Ed Ingebretson, a Jesuit and a fantastic teacher who just, you know, came in with all this energy and fire for poetry. And it was contagious. It got me working really hard on an oral report on Robert Frost, where we were supposed to do a report on a few poems. And I ended up doing notes on every single poem in his collected works volume and just, you know, finding such real worth in it and value in my life from these poems. It's something that I had previously gotten from writing poems, but now suddenly I found the right way into the literature, the much broader than just my own feelings and thoughts on a page. And it was, you know, it's been fantastic ever since. There are so many poets I love and admire. And just as a writer myself, it's a way of processing the world like any art form is. I think for some people, it's going to be music or visual art or sculpture, painting, some of them short stories, some of us poems. And it's been, you know, something that just helps me get through the day, really, at this point.
Matt, what is poetry and how do you differentiate poetry from other forms of prose?
Poetry is more about an attitude or emotional element to the written work, kind of like a translation as much as it is you know, an exposition of a story. It's trying to bring someone, you know, poems can definitely tell stories and keep histories, but they do it by putting somebody in the middle of it in a way that helps accentuate the feelings and the entire lesson of it, I think. At least those are the poems that I love the most that really take you through an experience in a way that's far different from a newspaper article, and even a little bit different than most novels.
What about song lyrics? Do you consider song lyrics poetry?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I think song lyrics, you know, rap, R.A.P. is, uh-huh. You know, the original name is rhythm and poetry. There's so many things. I think we tend to think of poetry as something that's supposed to be one monolithic thing that's smarter than us and all that good stuff. But I think there's 100 different genres or types of poetry that you could find. And song lyrics are there. So many different things that we may not think of as poetry because, you know, they're a little bit different than what we had in high school. But it's all there.
Help me understand. We've had Peter Nevlin a long time ago on the show. Do you know who Peter is? He's a Wizard Academy.
I don't know Peter.
Well, Peter has gone around the country. I think he's gone around the world, both competing and performing slams. Is that the right?
Oh, I should know him then.
Okay. Well, you should know him.
Yeah, because I've done that too.
he's very closely affiliated with the Wizard Academy, and his brother David is the senior audio producer for Roy Williams. And so the Nevlin brothers... Okay. Have their teeth into it. But tell me a little bit about slam for a minute. You say you've done it as well in terms of, obviously, it's one type of poetry, but certainly not all poetry is slam. And it seems that slam is specifically written to be performed.
Yeah, I think a poetry slam is an event where people come with their poems and compete with them. It's judged by audience members. And, you know, this thing started in Chicago in the 80s in a bar. So you're choosing five people from a bar audience to judge poetry. Are they going to be PhDs in literature? Maybe, maybe not. Are they going to be inebriated?
Probably.
Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is it, you know, it's not a scientific method. It's just about asking poets to take their work, whatever that work is, and make it appeal to the audience, make it make sense to the audience, make it entertaining for the audience. So that's what a poetry slam really does. And, you know, it's kind of a sort of poetry itself in that there are some standard kinds of poems you'll see at a poetry slam. But I've seen people use haiku or sonnets or sestinas or other forms at a poetry slam and do really well. It's more of a format, I think, but you know, it's also kind of its own style. And what it's done is it's made poetry more accessible and more interesting for thousands of people, maybe millions, you know, around the world. I've led workshops for the State Department in a few other countries.
In Minsk, in Minsk, right?
In Minsk.
Yeah. Who knows me in Minsk?
In Belarus.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was a blast.
And these...
Minsk is a heck of a place because there are 40-foot tall statues of poets in that town.
Wow.
So there's a real value for it. Yeah.
How did you end up doing that work for the State Department, just briefly?
Well, it started, I've done four different programs in four different countries. The first was Belarus, the one in Minsk, because our government and the Belarusian government were at odds, and this embassy of 30 people was down to a staff of 5 because the Belarusians had kicked most of the staff members out. And they were looking at ways to do programming that would appeal to the Belarusians and be culturally sensitive. And since poetry has a big place among many of the people in Belarus, one of their ideas was to do a poetry slam. And one of the 5 remaining staff members was a Nebraskan who had heard of me, knew I had both published books as well as done a lot in the poetry slam community, and had me submit a proposal. And next thing I know, I'm teaching poetry to young adults in Minsk.
That's
and running a poetry slam in a New York themed nightclub in Minsk. It was fantastic.
While we're traveling down memory lane, tell me a little bit. You either formed or led a significant poetry or arts council in Nebraska before you were named the state poet. What was that?
I was the president of the board of the Nebraska Center for the Book for several years.
Okay.
I also helped the Nebraska Arts Council with their Poetry Out Loud program and now run a nonprofit called the Nebraska Writers Collective.
So the last book that I was able to spot that you wrote or that was published was The Baby That Ate Cincinnati. Now, first of all, why was it not The Baby That Ate Omaha? Why was it Cincinnati?
It was Cincinnati, mainly from an old novelty song that I remember from listening late at night on the Dr. Demento show called The Cockroach That Ate Cincinnati.
That explains it, Dr. Demento. That's all we had to do. That explains
exactly.
It. Exactly. But the point, what I was going to ask you, so that was 2013. Last time I checked the calendar, yes. It's 2019. Is there another book from Matt Mason coming soon?
There will be before too long. I think part of the problem is I have two small kids and have been running a nonprofit that's been growing quickly. So I've been writing poems steadily, but the editing and the collecting into manuscripts has been slowed down a bit. But I've been working on that over the past couple of years, and I have three manuscripts that are just about on the verge of ready to go. The one that I think is most ready is a weird one called This is a Story About Disneyland and Midlife and Churros, about midlife crisis and Disneyland. So I'll start looking for a publisher soon. So anybody there from Disney Books, give me a call.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, I'll be looking around pretty soon.
Matt, and I'm sincere in asking this because I don't know the answer. What distinguishes good poetry from not good poetry, especially looking at something like publishing a book? So I know my background is in straight news. You can show me a manuscript for a book that's covering a straight topic, a feature, a profile, whatever it happens to be. And I have the horse sense and enough experience to look at it and know whether it's good or not. But I don't when it comes to poetry, and especially the diversity that exists in poetry. How do you know if you're judging a poetry competition or if you're submitting a manuscript for publication and somebody's judging you, what do you think is the criteria that they apply?
You know, that's the weird thing about poetry is it's very malleable in that everyone is going to have different criteria. I think the criteria you describe you as if you don't have actually have. I think if a poetry manuscript came across your desk and you were asked to judge it, you know, you'd ask yourself, is it accessible to me? Is it interesting to me? Does it seem well written? Are the commas in the right place if they use commas? And I think you'd be able to pick up very good manuscripts for publication that way. And everybody's going to look at it a little different. So you have to look at a publishing house and see what kinds of things they publish. Because like I said before, there are a lot of different styles of poetry, genres of poetry. And so you kind of have to know who publishes your particular genre. Like my Disneyland manuscript is a little more narrative than a lot of people expect poetry to be. It's a lot more accessible. It's actually not written for poets. It's written for Disney fans. But then I've got another manuscript of Nebraska poems that's a little bit more what you think of as a book of poetry, in being a little bit more, you know, not as open to a wider audience, but I think, no, I wouldn't say that. I don't know. I like writing for an audience, so it makes sense.
I wrote down a question, and I'm citing somebody, but I don't know whether I'm citing you from your website or the Omaha World Herald, so I apologize, but somebody wrote that the appointment of a state poet is predicated on the assumption that art matters. Do you know who said that? I don't know whether it was you or somebody else, but
I don't.
Okay.
I don't think that's me. It might be the author of the World Herald article.
Okay. So let's assume that that's the case, that it's predicated on the assumption that art matters. Why does it matter?
Yeah. It matters because it helps us get through our day. It helps us process the reality that we're living in. I mean, there's a reason that you find poetry and music and visual art in every single culture pretty much throughout time. It's something that helps us look at things from not the straightforward angle of like a newspaper article where we describe this happened in this way. sometimes if you look at it from a different angle, it just helps it make a little bit more sense, or helps you deal with it, or helps you get through it, or helps you enjoy it. I think it's just that kind of thing that touches on us as humans, and we try not to say it's important, but ultimately it's not like it's ever gone away. So
I'm going to assume that you have a great deal of latitude as the Nebraska state poet in terms of where you focus on. And I assume that among the things you can focus on is trying to get younger people in Nebraska to discover poetry if they haven't, to try to cultivate new writers, to promote existing Nebraskan poets and literary figures. I know you're new on the job, but do you have a sense do you have a sense as to which one of those you'd like to tackle first?
You know, I'm kind of tackling all of them. To become state poet, you submit a proposal, and my proposal is to try to get into communities around the state. You know, I'm going to attempt to get to all 93 counties.
I told you you're running for president. I told you you're running for president. Okay. All 93 counties. Okay. All 93 counties. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No problem. But then also into places like, you know, prisons, the reservations, the cultural centers. I want to get into all the communities around the state and work with kids as well as adults, but also as many times as possible, bring in local poets to read with me. Because, you know, being state poet draws a certain amount of people. And in these communities, I've done this to an extent in the past. And every time I go, someone will come up to me and it's like, hey, I've been writing for years. And they've got, you know, a small book. And I didn't know them before. And many in their community didn't know them. So I want to provide ways of shining a little bit more light, not just on poetry, but on the poets in these different communities. And I should say, I'm not getting a salary, but the Nebraska Arts Council and Humanities Nebraska make some grants available so that people can bring me in and, you know, I can get my mileage paid for and, you know, sandwiches and a little bit of extra money.
Gas money. You know, towards the end of last year in October, I had a guest on this podcast, Elliot Neff, who is a National Chess Federation master chess player. And surprisingly, we talked about the fact that although you have all these digital games, video games, virtual reality, etc., chess among young people in the country is actually still extraordinarily popular, probably more popular than it's been in decades. What about poetry? What's the health and state of poetry in America and Nebraska?
You know, the state and the health is good and growing. Book sales of poetry have gone up the past few years. My nonprofit works in more than 45 high schools around the state, and these students are getting a different grasp of poetry than any because they see it as performable and a little bit more entertaining and interesting. But part of that's the Poetry Slam movement has helped. There's a lot of poets on Instagram finding different ways of getting their work out. And, you know, a lot of people will pick at this or that about these popularizing forms of poetry, but they're getting people in the door. Whatever they are, they're gateway drugs to harder and harder forms of literature, so I'm all for it.
That's great. So, you know, you were talking about Belarus, so I get reports as to who listens to this podcast and from where. And it's always fascinates me the number of listeners that we have outside of North America. Among our listeners are some pretty loyal people in Mongolia, for example.
And what's your most popular continent outside of North America?
It's Europe. Don't ask me why. We have a lot of listeners in Ireland, and obviously in England, etc. But really, we have in Singapore. It's just fascinating that people find, and I'm sure it's the same for poetry, that they find this stuff. But a lot of my listeners. So I don't know what I was going to say is I don't know all my listeners, and we started with a core audience that really was pretty much alumni of Wizard Academy, and we still have an awful lot of alumni of Wizard Academy, but it's grown over the years because every time I have a guest on, he or she has a following and I pick up some of his or her followers. But I'm going to still assume that a lot of my listeners are creative types. Now, that maybe only will apply at this point to 50% of them, but a lot of them are. And I wonder, you were talking about sort of being a gateway drug. Is writing non-poetry a good setup for writing poetry? And is writing poetry good for, take for example, what Roy is always talking about? I want to do good radio ads, for example. Well, do I learn something by at night after my day's work coming home and trying to write poetry? What can poetry inspire and what helps be a better poet?
Yeah, well, I think all of these, I think if you're writing, you're helping your brain in the first place, but you're also helping yourself figure out other kinds of writing. I think if you write poetry, you know, you're going to take that experience and look at your essays or your newspaper articles or your novel a little bit differently in how you use language. I've gotten a lot of help for my poetry by taking a short story class, just because I'm looking at language and structure differently. So all these things help. And I think, you know, radio ads, I would be shocked if a lot of folks don't write poetry or consider poetry in some way, because, you know, you're trying to do the same thing as poetry. You've got limited space. You have to make every second matter 100%, 200% maybe. And that's what you're doing with a poem. So I think, you know, if you're not taking a creative writing class, hey, you folks writing radio ads, take a poetry class, check it out, read a book of poetry and see if it comes to help you solve a problem you might be having with how to word something or how to put something, because I think they're very similar.
Do you know how many states have an official state poet?
I'm not sure. I think it's somewhere around 46 or 47.
So
there's
like
only a few that don't.
Is there like a convention once a year where you all get together and talk poetry?
There's not.
There should be. There should be.
There should. I asked the previous state poet, and there are some very loose things that may happen every few years, but there's nothing official.
All right. Well, we'll have to plan it at the Wizard Academy. It's a you know, it's a beautiful campus, and wouldn't that be an awesome venue to host a national gathering of official state poets? On the topic of the Wizard Academy, that'd be cool, right? I'll talk to Roy. I'll talk to Roy. I'll say,
that would be the best. That would be the perfect venue for this.
Right. I think so. Seriously, I think so. On the topic of the Wizard Academy, I know it's got a lot of illustrious alumni. So I know it's got a Nobel Prize winner. I can't tell you whether it has a Pulitzer Prize winner. I was a Pulitzer Prize nominee from the Wall Street Journal. So I've been a student.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I've been a student and a teacher at the Academy, but I do think you're the Academy's first state poet. Now, do you owe it all to the Academy? I know you're an alumnus. When did you go? When did you go there? What did you learn?
Well, you know, I was there just in this past fall and then am named state poet three, 4 months later. So
it must be that.
You decide.
It must be. Matt, what course did you take?
I took the one on making videos.
Oh, cool.
And finding an audience for video.
Well, that's great. Was Rex Williams involved?
It was
in that?
A great class. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah, he was part of there.
Yeah, he's done a phenomenally good job with all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Well, everybody helping was fantastic, and it's given me wonderful ideas. I don't have a video cast up yet, but I've been, you know, doing some work to get that started. Even if I never get video up, I think the way that class helped me look through the creative process of finding an audience is something that poets need to be considering much more also, how to build the tribe, as they put it. And I think more poets are doing work that builds a tribe, and it's a great way of looking at it.
Nice. So I'm going to let you go here. And before you go, I'm going to want you to delight us with a poem or two, your choice. But I want to ask you a little bit before that. I seldom have a guest on this program that I can't do something to help them market something. So I could help you market one of your existing books. Again, the most recent one is The Baby That Ate Cincinnati, very nicely reviewed, by the way. So I could help you do that. Or are you available? And again, I'm not, I don't mean this insulting. I mean it to help you. Are you available if somebody wanted to hire you to do some writing for them?
Possibly. It kind of depends. My schedule is, I've just become state poet, so my schedule is a little wild right now.
Okay.
We have to figure out things with my nonprofit day job. I want to hire, hopefully we can hire on another staff so that I'll be able to take on a bit more, though, with the state poet work. But yeah, if anybody is interested in having some writing done or looked at, I'm
possibly available.
A little slow at first, but I am possibly available.
Okay. And your website, for those who would like to visit, and you have some blog posts there and some videos, etc., is Matt, as in Matthew, matt.midverse.com. Again, matt.midverse.com. Now, either midverse means somebody interrupted you in the middle of speaking and then in midverse, or it's part of like the universe. There's the middle part and there's the upper part and the lower part. How did you choose midverse? Which, what is it supposed to mean?
It's kind of all of that. It's
okay.
I'm in Omaha, so I'm in the middle of the country.
That's true.
In the middle of the universe and the
okay.
poetic term for verse. It's all there.
So matt.midverse.com, and there's also contact information
yep.
for Matt if you want to reach out to him by phone or email. Okay. So Matt, I don't even have to pay you for this, which is really impressive. I get a reading from the official state poet of Nebraska, and truly, I think that's terrific. What are you going to read for us?
All right, I've got a poem for you that's actually from The Baby That Ate Cincinnati.
Awesome.
This is a poem. Yeah, this is a poem called "Notes for My Daughter Against Chasing Storms."
Go.
Tornadoes swing through like a kid playing hopscotch, rip one house to splinters, and leave the neighbors unmussed. Up and down, here and there. They flatten churches on Easter Sunday, take up whole towns by the roots, drive a piece of straw into a tree, stick a single 2x4 into a roof, and declare it art. Stack a car, on a motorcycle, call it a night. And that, my daughter, is how teenage boys approach love. I don't say that it is evil, more like an amoral force of nature. They look all pleasant showers before they tear your roof off and leave your trees in shreds. So you may dream of his blue eyes, cloud-free compliments, the music he likes, the motorcycle he drives, the great tattoos he's got on his neck. But when the skies turn that yellow, that green, when hail starts popping through air fit to boil, you listen to my forecast. You leave the car parked, grab a flashlight with one hand, radio with the other, go for the basement. Now you run.
Wow. Wow. Awesome. Do you have a daughter? Is one of the children you're raising a daughter?
Yeah, actually both of them are. I've got two daughters.
Ah, I see. Plenty of material for your next book.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, well, this whole book, it's about fatherhood.
Yeah.
I'm a person who never expected to be a parent, so I didn't plan things. And so everything is brand new. I had no roadmap. It's like, whoa, this is amazing. What is this? So
I do want to ask you one other question just based upon what we just listened to. And thank you for sharing that.
Uh-huh.
In your life experience, how does the impact of poetry differ when the receptacle is the ears versus the eyes? So I could have just read that poem.
Oh.
I could have just read that poem
yeah.
from the book, and my experience, I think, would be different than having listened to it. And I wonder whether you've
yeah.
given some thought as to the audio versus the visual input of poetry.
Definitely. I think that's one thing that's kind of important and different, and I think both equally really wonderful, because I think we take in poems a certain way when we read them on the page, and the author tries to guide us in how to read it by the rhythms they choose and the line breaks and the spacings on to kind of help, but we're still going to fill in the gaps our own way and come to a poem to a certain respect. I think being able to read it out loud to an audience is helpful too, because we can spell things out a little bit better with our voice or our face if they're watching us, our hands. You know, at a live reading, the audience has one chance to understand a poem. So we have to use our voice to make it work that way. I think on the page, the audience can come back and forth, you know, figure out a line if they're not sure, come back to it the next day. And so I think they're both just very stylistically different experiences. But I love both. I love reading a poem I love, and then finding an audio or video version of the poet just to see how it differs from how I read it, you know, yep. What more I can get from it.
I enjoyed listening. I am genuinely, trust me, I'm going to order a copy of The Baby That Ate Cincinnati. I will enjoy looking at your writing more closely. It's available if it doesn't sell out after I buy it. it's available from a variety of places. Check your local bookstore. If not, it's available on Amazon. Again, it's The Baby That Ate Cincinnati by Matt Mason. If you do want to get in touch with Matt because you basically have a foundation and you want to, you know, gift him and his nonprofits a few million dollars, you can you can reach out to him again at matt.midverse.com. Matt.midverse.com. Matt, I will see you probably 2021 at the first annual State Poets Conference at the Wizard Academy. It'd be my pleasure.
I'm looking forward to it.
My pleasure to introduce you if I can. Hopefully you'll be the host of the event. And please stay in contact. We'd love to have you back. When you do finally get around to getting that next book out, we'll publicize it for you.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. This has been great.
I've enjoyed it a great deal. So thank you. That does wrap it up for this week's podcast. I'm your host, Dean Rothbart. Until next week, bring some poetry into your life.
Want to learn how to generate free publicity and social media buzz for your business? Schedule a one-hour phone consultation with Monday morning radio host and buzz-snatching maestro, Dean Rothbart, 1-303-296-1200. Dean, who has consulted hundreds of successful small business owners, will help you unlock your hidden media and marketing assets. Limited slots still available this month. Phone 303-296-1200 to learn more.
You've been listening to Monday Morning Radio with Dean Rothbart. Be sure to read and subscribe to my weekly email column, The Monday Morning Memo, at mondaymorningmemo.com, where I share my observations on the world at large. Trends, tastes, marketing, advertising, small business, whatever else is on my mind. This is Roy H. Williams.
Good luck, all the best, till we hear from you again.